Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
The big day has arrived. Your youngest child is about to leave the nest and start his or her life as an adult. You and your spouse start making plans for this exciting new chapter of your lives, but something is holding you back. And this feeling is far more common for empty nesters than you might think. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. Today is the conclusion of a classic four-part series Dr. Dobson recorded many years ago with a group of four thoughtful and knowledgeable women discussing the topic of the empty nest. Here now is Dr. James Dobson on today's edition of Family Talk.
All right, folks, I'm going to press you a little bit. In fact, I'm going to get downright nosy, and I'm going to ask you a difficult question. How do you handle guilt or regret over failure? As you look back, do you see things that you didn't do right, and how big a factor is that in your life now?
I think that the secret to that for me is not letting it heap up in great mounds. I make mistakes. Can you believe that?
Really? Honestly? Let's get them down here.
You know, what's great about it, though, is that in Christ, there's a place to be forgiven. It's a beautiful word, forgiven. And we make mistakes all the time. With the best of motives, we can make mistakes. And I think transparency, as you're raising your kids, is the secret. Not getting to that last final day and then, oh, there was so much I did wrong. They know. We're not trying to model perfection to our kids. We're modeling forgiveness and a love relationship with the Lord. And love does wonderful things.
So you have been able to forgive yourself. Sometimes I think the Lord can forgive us a whole lot quicker and easier than we forgive ourselves.
Yeah, and sometimes my friends and my family have helped me to do that. My husband's real quick to say, don't talk about yourself that way. Let that one go. And that's very helpful to me. Because when I do make a mistake, it's, oh, how could I have been so stupid? Mm-hmm. That kind of a bad word that I would never use toward my kids, would use it toward myself. And my husband will say, don't use that. You're not a stupid person. You're right. And so this constant daily saying, you know, I blew it with the kids, going to the children and saying, I messed up there and I'm really sorry. That's okay, Mom. We forgive you. You know, making it right as it goes, you don't get to finally the end of high school and say, well, there's a number of things we need to clear the air about because the relationship
you cleared it
has
all along.
That's right.
The empty nest really starts when the day they're born, if you think about it. That's a preparation for that day, and it's all these issues are a lifespan accounting.
Would you agree that the empty nest syndrome is likely to be more difficult when you do have a lot of regret and guilt?
Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Definitely. Yes. Yes.
How do you deal with it?
Well, I looked back on some of my parenting and really have gone through some periods of real guilt and saying, if I had only, and why didn't I do it this way? I came to know the Lord 12 years ago, so our children were about third grade and fifth grade at that time. And I thank the Lord that he came into my life at that time. I sure wish that it had happened a lot earlier, but those were real important years with the children. And so I had the love of God and at that time, but I still look back and made so many mistakes. So now I take that to prayer. I take it to the Lord, and I say, God, help me deal with that. And then in turn, praying for my children for that emotional and spiritual healing in their lives for any damage that maybe we may have done as parents to their ego and to their self-esteem.
Are you able to do that emotionally, Sally?
I believe so. Lord has really helped me with that and continues to as I get flashbacks in my mind of a circumstance or a situation or how we disciplined or didn't discipline. And so it still comes, but the Lord's there to meet us when we come to him and can take that to him.
Parenthood is a guilty affair, isn't it?
It's
almost impossible to do it without guilt because we are imperfect human beings.
Aren't you the one that said in one of your books, when the overall tone of the home is positive, the children will remember that and a lot of the negative things will be forgotten?
What I actually said, Judy, and how nice of you to remember. Because
I remember
which
lots
book
of other things too.
I think I said that we are allowed some mistakes. We don't have to do it perfectly. No one ever does. As long as the overall tone is somewhere near the right note,
yes.
I think is
okay.
what I said.
Well, I picked up on that, and that has been the saving grace with me, because I, along with you, Beth, I really relate to this business of saying I'm sorry. And we, as in our family, have tried to do that whenever there's been an occasion where we did feel sorry. I have said many times to my children, I'm sorry. I wish I had have done something different, or I'm sorry I shouldn't have said that. I identified, Sonny, with what you said about seeing the baby without the hat. That would be me. I would say, where's his hat? You know, and then I would say, I'm sorry. I had no right to say that. But to say, I think that the ability to say I'm sorry at any point, and then to say I love you. I think one of the things that was the hardest for me when the kids were gone is that I couldn't go to their bedroom door and say at night before I went to bed, I love you, because they weren't there to hear it.
You said it every night for all those years.
I said it every night for all those years, and they grew accustomed to hearing that. And I'm just glad that I have allowed the children to see me as I am. I have not tried to hide my feelings from them. So I can do about anything, and they understand, and whether they understand, they accept it. You know, and I can say I'm sorry, but those three words, I love you, can cover a multitude of mistakes. Mm-hmm.
And I can just guess, Judy, that every night as these college kids not off to sleep in the dorm, they're hearing.
They can hear it.
I love you, because there's a whole memory history.
You don't have to say
it
anymore. It echoes in their brain.
And the little girl that my son loves, and that I do believe God has sent to him, I have been able to say to her, I love you. You know, and I do love her, and I pray for them every day that God will continue, you know, to work in their lives. And
you're going to be a good mother-in-law, Judy. And in fact, when you are a mother-in-law, we'll bring you here with three other mother-in-laws and play a tape of today.
The newest update.
There's just one other thing to it. It's, I don't want to deviate from the subject, but I think that we mothers who talk about the empty nest dare not forget what our husbands are feeling. Mm-hmm. Because Paul made a statement to me not too long ago, and I was so wrapped up in my own feelings of hurt. And he has been the greatest comforter to me through the years. And as I looked at him, there were tears, and he said, you know, Judy, I hurt too.
Yeah.
And it sort of took me back. And I thought, now, why did that take me back? You know, he's a sensitive man. And I think because society allows us women to cry and express everything, and society tells the men to hold it all back, we need to think about what the fathers are feeling.
Yeah,
a little more.
He may not be talking about it, but he's feeling it the same way.
Not too long ago, well, I think with both Bob and I, we've had to go to each one of our children. Or felt we had to go to each one of our children and say we were sorry for particular instances that we felt very badly about. And it's really made the bond even warmer and even better.
They accepted it.
Yeah. I know that with my oldest son, sometimes I can't imagine how I could have been so insensitive or unaware of something that he was going through, or something that I didn't, it just didn't register with me. And I've said, I'm really sorry, and I hope you can forgive me. Just a silly little example. Since our youngest daughter has been in Spokane in college, I have sent her a care package every week of cookies or muffins or whatever, something. And
would you like my address?
The two boys that went to college here, Rob went to Pomona and David went to Irvine, and it never entered my head to send them a package. I don't know why. I guess because Sandy's the kind of person that says, hey, Mom, are you going to send me a package? And all I need to, fine. If you just tell me what you want, I'll try and do it.
Were they aware of that?
I don't know whether they were or not. I think they probably were. But they evidently didn't feel they could or didn't know how to say, how about sending me a package? I would have just loved it so much if they had. And that's the kind of guilt that I have. Why didn't I think of it myself? I don't know why.
It shows the individual differences in temperament. If right. I was your son, I would have made sure you got that message.
Right. Well, maybe it didn't cross their mind, but I suppose I didn't think of it because they're still in town, more or less.
Sonny, if that's your biggest error.
Oh, dear, no, that's not the biggest kind of thing.
You know, again, you all, the four of you have expressed your answers to this question about guilt and regret as a problem that has been resolved, as something that you had to deal with, but you gave it to the Lord. I'm glad that's true for you. There are an awful lot of people listening that's not true for.
And it may not be true at the empty nest moment. Yeah. It may, the hope we have is that it may be a future resolution. Your kids may all be gone with some unresolved feelings from those child-raising years that maybe 10 years away will then come back and be resolved. We've all heard those stories, that you have to sort of come out and maybe even become a parent yourself to go back and work out with mom and dad those feelings.
Well, in those 10 years, will you come back and tell us how you've
how it
done it?
Sure.
We'll have a reunion of this group down the road someplace. Great. That would really be a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of go around the circle in conclusion here and give some advice or just your concluding thoughts to mothers of 12, 13, 14-year-olds who are 3 or 4 years away from this empty nest. Mm. Anything that you would say to her or to him, to the father as well, about what is coming and how to get ready for it. Words of wisdom, Beth, we'll start with
big
you.
Big words of wisdom. I think that at that stage you should, and even if your children are younger, allow them times to be away from you. Small moments of time to be, release them over the years to more and more separateness. That's your final goal, so that at the end of this time period, you have a celebration to say, we've done it, we've made it. So allow some time for the children to separate from you through those child-raising years, if it's overnight or away on a weekend trip. Those kinds of
things. I made the point that you begin releasing at the moment of birth.
Yes.
You know, when the child holds his own bottle, you have been released of that responsibility.
Yes.
And you've transferred that from yourself to him. When he walks, you don't have to carry him everywhere. You have to chase him, but you don't have to carry him everywhere from that point on. And so really, all of childhood is preparation for that moment of release. And I remember when I was a junior in high school, my father was a minister, and he was invited to speak for 2 weeks at a church someplace. And my mother left me at home alone for 2 weeks with the car. I was a junior in high school. She allowed me to have friends to come over and stay with me, and I had different friends that rotated in and out through the course of those 2 weeks. And I remembered thinking at the time that that was pretty risky. You know, I knew that I was immature. I was 17 years of age. Here she gave me a car, and I had to run of the house, and I was free for that period of time. And after I grew up, I asked her why she did that. I sat down with her one day, and I said, Mom, why in the world did you turn that car over to me and allow me to have the house? I could have torn the house up. I could have burned it down. I could have had parties. I could have done all kinds of things. And she said, it's because I knew that a year later you were going to be away at college and totally out from under my authority and responsibility. And in fact, I came to California to college. She knew I was going to do that, so I would have been a couple of thousand miles from her. And she said, I wanted to give you some experience in that independence. And she said, first of all, I knew I could trust you. She said, I took a gamble, but I knew I could trust you. So I wouldn't recommend this for every 17-year-old. You know, not all of them could handle it. But she knew that I could, and she was giving me an opportunity to do just what you're saying, Beth, to feel what it was like to be out from under her authority.
So she knew she could trust you, and then you had a sense of personal autonomy.
You I didn't knew know you that could, she could trust me.
But
I wondered
all
if
over,
she
you
could.
You said, I did it.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's what
and
the kids
I grew
experience.
Through it.
Right.
That's right. That's good advice. Judy?
I would say accentuate the positive. For every negative thing you see in your child, if you really stop and think about it, I bet you can count 10 things that are positive. And if a child, mm-hmm. and this begins way, way young, when they're very little, for them to have that sense that mom and dad trust them. I don't know what comes first, if they're trustworthy and you trust them or you trust them and they're trustworthy. But I just have a very strong belief in the fact that if from the very early stages you praise your children for the things they do right, they feel like mom and dad trust me and I don't want to break that trust. Now, I know that that is not a pat answer and that is not always the case. But generally speaking, that's...
You act like that even if
that's
it's not
right.
entirely
that's
true.
That's right. And accentuate the positive and let the kids know. Praise them a lot. You know, the world is there to tear them down. And when they're at their lowest point, they ought to be able to feel like when I go home, whether my folks understand or not, they'll accept. Huh. And I can go home and I can be sheltered there.
So what you're really saying is you want to build those friendships.
That's right.
So for the rest of your life... You are friends with one another
That's
after
right.
the parenting
That's
years
right.
are over.
That's right.
Ah. Sonny, how about you?
I would say to respect each child as an individual and to be aware of their temperament and their talents and to not be so insecure that if they don't agree with you, you can't handle it.
In what they do with their life, in where they go to college. Give me some specifics.
One time with our oldest son, I said to him, you must respect me. And he said to me, what have you done to earn it? And I said, I don't have to do anything to earn it. God created me. And until I do something so totally rotten that you can't possibly respect me, you owe me respect. I feel the same way about children.
The same way
I
they
feel that
are
they,
created by God, yes, and you owe them respect.
Yes, as individuals and as separate people. And I don't want to expect them to fit my preconceived ideas of how they ought to be. I want to have enough respect for them that they can, even as children, tell me how they feel about any given subject. Or
even a dirty room is not enough for you to sacrifice that respect, is that right?
Nope, because I think that's their little part of the house that is theirs, and they have a right to keep it the way they want to. Not that you shouldn't teach them how to clean and all that stuff, but that's their own private space. And if they like living messy, go ahead.
Yeah. Preserve the relationship at
right.
all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Okay, Sally? You're the anchor lady here.
Okay, I think of a couple of things. I think back on when my children were in adolescence and the struggles that we went through as their personalities almost seemed to change. It was into a Dr. Jekyll and a Mr. Hyde. And I look back and think, well, no, what would I have done differently? And I think of two things, listening and acceptance, which goes along with what Sonny said. I think I would ask the Lord for more listening ears to really listen to what they were saying, to give them the extra time that they needed, and then acceptance, accepting them for who they are. I remember an incident when our daughter was in her, it was either eighth grade or high school, and we were fighting back and forth terribly, and I looked at myself, I stopped and I thought, who is this inside of me? And I had to stop and see, I was really concerned that my daughter was going to grow up and be fighting, and we were going to continue to fight, and I just became very distressed. And at that time, I turned to the Lord, and I said, God, what is it? And he said, Sally, your daughter is following your example. You need to be the one to lead the way. And it really challenged me in my own relationship with God and who I was as a parent. Underneath all of that, I really needed to accept her for who she was and not try and mold her and make her into the daughter that I wanted, that I knew was going to be the perfect person. and just accept her for her special gifts and her wonderful personality that she had.
Boy, that's easy to talk about here. It sure is tough to do, isn't it? In the heat of the emotion and the conflict that occur in the home, and you get tired and you get irritable, and you don't always deal with things rationally. I called my daughter on the phone a couple of weeks ago and apologized for overreacting to something that really wasn't all that significant. And it was a very warm time between us, and she really appreciated it. But I was dead wrong. And I, if it had been in the morning, it would not have happened. It happened at 10 o'clock at night, and I was tired, and I just overreacted out of fatigue. And I think, again, Judy, the Lord allows us a few of those mistakes, especially if we'll apologize
thank
for
him
them.
For that.
I thank you for that. I thank the four of you for sharing with us on these broadcasts and for being our guests. And, Sonny, you can bake muffins for me anytime you want to.
I thought of bringing you some, but I didn't know how many employees you had. I don't think I could do that.
I used to get those care packages that you were talking about when I was in the Army, and I would look forward to those things. And when they would come, I would tear open the packages, and I would open the can that my mother had sent all these cookies in, and you know what would happen. Mm-hmm. Every troop there would grab for cookies, and they'd be gone. So I learned to open those things when nobody else was around, and I learned to eat cookies without chewing. I would press it into the roof of my mouth and kind of work on it with my tongue so they would never know it was there. And if you will send me some muffins, I will be equally discreet. It's a pleasure to have you all here, and we will plan a reunion of this group down the road someplace.
Great.
God bless you all.
Thank you.
And on that rather lighthearted note, we conclude this helpful four-part discussion on helping parents prepare for the empty nest season. This was a classic conversation we heard today on Family Talk, a discussion Dr. James Dobson recorded many years ago, but the principles are still relevant even today. Each installment in this four-part series is available for you to download when you go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. You can stream it right there. And while you are there, you'll also find a web exclusive, a portion of this conversation that is not included in the broadcast edition. It confronts the issue of what happens when your children leave home under less than ideal circumstances. If you have a prodigal, a black sheep among your adult children, be sure to click on this exclusive audio content found only at drjamesdobson.org. Please know how much we appreciate your ongoing financial support of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. This program is completely listener-supported. We rely on God through your tax-deductible donations to help us continue in this work that He's called us, equipping families to stand strong for righteousness in today's culture by modeling healthy marriages and healthy parent-child relationships. You can make your donation securely online when you go to drjamesdobson.org. You can make your contribution over the phone when you call toll-free, 877-732-6825. Be sure to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
The empty nest is painful, but it gives you a great perspective on parenting. Several years ago, our youngest child, Ryan, went off to Chicago for his freshman year in college. His final day at home was filled with the hustle and bustle of packing and getting him ready for a new life. And somehow, we missed the gravity of that moment. But then as we were driving into the airport the next morning, an unexpected wave of grief swept over me. I thought I couldn't stand to see him go. It wasn't that I wanted to hold him in childhood or exercise control on his life. No, I mourned the end of an era, a precious time of my life when Ryan and his sister Danae were young and their voices rang in the halls of our house. I couldn't hide the tears as we hugged goodbye at gate 18. If you're thinking that I'm hopelessly sentimental about my kids, you're right. But I hope that my experience conveys a message for those of you whose children are still underfoot. The days that you've been given to care for your kids are much briefer than you think. When you stand where my wife and I are today, you'll know that the parenting responsibility is the most important task in living, and it's worth everything it costs you to do the job right. Oh, and if you happen to see our son or daughter, ask them to call home, won't you?
Hi, I'm Dr. Tim Clinton for the James Dobson Family Institute. Who inspires you on matters of faith, family, and culture? If you don't already get it, sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter at drjamesdobson.org. Each month, you're going to receive insight and news that impacts your family and solid advice that you can trust. Whether it's wisdom for parents, tips for building a lasting marriage, or discernment on issues your family may be facing, you're going to find direction, encouragement, and more every month. Visit drjamesdobson.org and sign up for that monthly newsletter today. And again, that's drjamesdobson.org. You'll be glad you did.